University Forum is a presentation of Nebraska Wesleyan University, which brings speakers to campus to lecture on a variety of topics. The opinions expressed by the speakers do not necessarily represent the opinions of Nebraska Wesleyan University or of this station. Today, University Forum presents Grace Flores Hughes, former director of the Community Relations Service for the United States Department of Justice, and her lecture, The Power of Diversity in American Society. The Community Relations Service provides assistance to communities and persons to resolve disputes based on race, color, or national origin, and to aid to immigrants and refugees. Hughes, who served with the Department of Justice from 1988 to 1992, was one of the highest-ranking Hispanic Americans in the Bush administration and currently serves as president of Grace Incorporated. She has been a major contributor to a number of federal studies on Hispanic Americans, migrant workers, and undocumented aliens, and is a member of the Harvard Journal of Hispanic Policy and the Alumni Executive Council of the John F. Kennedy School of Government at Harvard University. In 1988, Hughes was named one of the 100 most influential Hispanics in the United States by Hispanic Business Magazine. In 1990, she received the Outstanding Public Service Award from the National Capital Area Chapter of the American Society for Public Administration. A native of Texas, Hughes received her bachelor's degree from the University of the District of Columbia and a master's from Harvard. She had previously served as a visiting professor in political science at Nebraska Wesleyan and the University of Nebraska at Omaha. Join us now for University Forum and Grace Flores Hughes.
Thanks, Bob. Good morning. And I hope y'all can see me from there, but maybe you don't want to see me, you just want to hear me, so that's okay. We'll figure this thing out. It's a great pleasure to be back here in Nebraska Wesleyan. And for those of you who don't know, and Bob did tell you, I was a visiting instructor in the political science department back in 1983. And for those of you who don't care that I was here, but may wonder how I happened to be in Lincoln, well, that's another story. Actually, my husband was the Major General in charge of war planning at Offutt Air Force Base. And I was looking for a job. And Bob Oberst, as he said, who was the acting head of the political science department back then, had the good sense to hire me. I have to admit that was my first teaching job, and I enjoyed it very much, so much that perhaps I may wind up doing that again, but probably not in Lincoln, not because I don't like Lincoln, but because I'm not from this area. But I do want to thank Bob again publicly for giving me this opportunity, this first break, because this job helped me to get another teaching job when they couldn't hire me for the next year at the University of Nebraska in Omaha. And that's probably the first time that Wesleyan has ever helped UNO in anything. So I am glad for the experience and the opportunity to have done that. But actually, you all get a lot of play because every time I'm introduced nationwide at various speaking engagements, they always bring up my teaching experience in Nebraska, and I always get there's always one Nebraska in the audience who cheers and screams and hollers that Nebraska's being recognized. So if for anything, I have brought some attention to the university here and in UNL. But I am familiar with the standards that you apply to the forum speakers, and when I was here, I knew about them, and I never thought that I would be a forum speaker, and I'm glad that I am one today. And I will share with you my Washington insights, my personal experience, and my research about the power of diversity in American society, which is the subject for today, in which I know that you all want me to move on and talk about the subject instead of all these other things, but that's all right. We'll get to it soon enough. But before I go into the today's subject, let me just say that I have lived in the Washington, D.C. area most of my adult life. And for those of you who are familiar with the area, you know that it is a different kind of place for a lot of reasons. One being what President Harry Truman once said about the area, that if you want a friend in Washington, D.C., you bring a dog. I can assure you that is as true as today as we know Harry said it. And if any one of you saw the Clarence Thomas hearings last year, you know what I mean. That's just an example. Well, today what I'm going to try and do is define for you what diversity means. I will talk to you about the groups that are identified as diversity, and I will talk to you about those problems that have cropped up as a result of this label of these diverse groups. There's also problems associated with the diversity population as a whole in the categorizing of that, and I will mention, I will discuss that also, and I will discuss my own predictions that I see for the future of this country, given the diverse population of this country, given the problems that are occurring. So let me just tell you a little bit about diversity. And the term diversity is heard a lot these days. I'm sure you've all heard diversity, right? This is not an unfamiliar subject with people from Nebraska. Although I know that you don't have a large, diverse population as Washington, D.C., or New York City, or Los Angeles, but you are familiar with it, and that's one of the things I want to discuss with you today and bring some thoughts to you, and maybe we can have a little dialogue later on. But what does diversity really mean, and who does it really include, or who should it really be included in this category? And once identified, who does this population, or how does this population affect our nation's future? First, diversity, as I'm certain everyone in this room already knows, means to be different. Or, as Webster says, a point or a respect in which things differ. In this case, we are talking about the difference among the human beings of this country. That is, their different language, their religion, their skin color, their hair texture, their music, their food. The differences among human beings can be positive and rewarding. However, if those differences are exploited in a negative way, they can have a negative effect on the country, as I will be discussing later on in my presentation. But first, what I would like to do is just give you a quick history. I don't want to bore you with a lot of labor and a lot of government actions here, but I do want to break down this diversity category for you. And I want to give you a quick history about the groups that were originally identified as diverse. And I will mention them from here on as the traditionally diverse group, so we don't get very confused here. Now, I might lose y'all, but I don't think so, because y'all are a quick audience, and it's just me that may get confused, but we'll get it all straight here. What the government did is, in its attempt to count the country's population, the federal government, I call it, but really we're talking about the Census Bureau here, initially collected and broke down its census data by black, white, and other. However, during the late 60s and early 70s, the federal government wanted to learn more about its population, especially about those individuals who were the recipient of federal assistance programs. This data collection effort was done, believe it or not, in order to identify and eventually assist those eligible individuals found to be underrepresented in the various federal assistance programs. Now, let me just quickly outline to you those racial and ethnic categories that the feds promulgated. They were black, not of Hispanic origin, white, not of Hispanic origin, Hispanic, Native American, and Asian and Pacific Islander, and other. Anyone who could not identify himself or herself in these five categories fell in the other column. Now, developing these categories was not an easy task. And I know because I was one of several persons assigned to a task force that would recommend the most descriptive terms possible so that the government could collect the most comprehensive data ever on human beings. Thus began the identification of our diverse population. Now, this may be a question later on. I may be answering the question now, but the reason for the not of Hispanic origin for whites and blacks is because many Hispanics identify themselves as either white or black. And we wanted to break down as much as possible the groups in those categories, and that's why we did it deliberately that way. And I'm sure you all are familiar with these categories by now because you do fill in census information and job information and so forth that includes this category. So now you meet one of the authors of those categories. So you have me to blame every time that you have to fill something out there. But as I said, we did it for positive reasons, not merely to find out what all of you all were about here. Not totally. So we finally developed the specific categories that would allow not, as I said, just the government, but ourselves to learn about the makeup of our country's population. We would learn, for example, which groups work more than others, which are the wealthiest and which are the poorest, which have the highest education attainment and which are a dismal failure. This data also tells you where people reside and who they reside with. And all of this information is broken down, as I said, by age, sex, race, and ethnicity. So we have a very comprehensive data going in this country, and it's all to be helpful so we can all help each other identify things and be able to help those that are underrepresented or they're forgotten. However, regardless of the data's important revelations, as well as the good intentions of the government workers such as myself, I need to pat myself, we did work very hard in this, who spent a lot of time and effort in developing this racial and ethnic categories, we found that not everyone was satisfied with the categories. Some Hispanics said that they did not identify with the term Hispanic. Instead, they preferred the term Latino. Others preferred the term Chicano, while still others insisted in choosing the white category. It's okay what you want to call yourself, but the reason is we need to count everybody accordingly, and unless we have specific data and very correct data, it's very difficult to help groups, and that's the reason why it's important to identify yourself accordingly. Blacks, in the meantime, were still being referred to as Negroes in some states, and today many blacks are now using the term Afro or Afro-Americans to identify themselves. In the meantime, there were other racial and ethnic categories used, such as people of color. I don't know if y'all are familiar with that term, but that term has come up. Some of the groups included in this category were blacks, Hispanics, and anyone else who did not identify themselves as a white person. Still another racial ethnic category I remember from the 1980s was called third world people. I remember when I was a graduate student at Harvard being invited to a meeting of third world people. Now, I thought I heard it all, but I had never heard the term third world people. That was beyond the pale for me, and I am sure for my relatives who fought very hard to get to this country. And by the way, they did not get to this country by swimming across some river either. So here they were working very hard and protecting it from foreign adverse hands and then turn around and be labeled third worlders. So I guess what I'm saying is there's a point where this whole categorizing business can get out of control to the point of being ridiculous. So enter in another diverse labeling. Now, I will not even get into the discussion today about the negative and the mean-spirited categorizing that we all call each other, mostly behind and in front of our backs. You can read about that in my book if I ever get it done, but I'm working on it, so I'll have a good discussion on this other aspect of it and why it goes on. Currently, though, with the passage of the civil rights laws protecting age, gender, and disabilities, decision-makers in both the private and public sector began adding these three groups to the term diversity to identify its workforce and its student body. So you're following me here. We've got this traditional diverse groups, and now we're adding these three others. Well, there are a lot of problems associated with this diverse category now when you include everybody else. Not when you include them, but just overall. And let me just explain what I mean by that, and then I'll break down the examples. First, I believe that the term or category of diversity is now too often applied to our schools, employment, and neighborhoods. That is, it's just one more variation of a label or category. It's no different than the labeling that has been going on for years, and in this case, it has the potential for negative connotations. In other words, it's one thing to categorize groups to collect sensible and practical data. It is another to categorize people for the sake of separating and exploiting their differences, particularly from the rest of the white population. Now, let me explain what I mean by this. Some areas of this country fail to recognize that diversity can include a little bit of every American face, not just minority faces. In most cases, the diversity category fails to include the other groups protected under the Civil Rights Act, such as the ones I mentioned, women, the aged, and people with disabilities. It also is just as important to include, but normally does not, white males. After all, that's part of the diverse population we have. I mean, it's a little bit of everybody, but that's not the way it's going right now. It's separating the minority groups from the rest of the population. I'm also concerned that the term diversity may wind up dividing rather than bringing together white America and the traditionally identified diverse groups. Such distinctions among groups could create more racism than already exists and further polarize these groups. So let me just give you an example of what I mean here. There are many companies and institutions that do not like to develop affirmative action programs, let alone set and reach quotas on minority or diversity hiring. Some, and maybe I should say a lot, and give them the benefit of the doubt, but there are some managers who prefer to have a diversified staff, but at their own discretion. They do not appreciate the government dictating to them who they should hire. Much of this resistance is often waged against minorities who some company managers resent hiring because they find themselves being forced to hire or promote them only in order to satisfy federal regulators. To compound the problem, there are those managers who feel that their own freedom is being violated because they are not able to choose who they want to hire or promote. The truth of the matter is that quotas are not federally mandated. Affirmative action programs are encouraged in order that the companies may realize their workforce profile and add to it accordingly. In any case, diversity should imply cooperation and togetherness, not separatism and divisiveness. Let me give you an example about what I say this and how it can work. When I took over the agency that Bob mentioned, the Community Relations Service, it's a small agency in the Department of Justice that it's mandated to resolve racial conflicts, I did not hire all Hispanics and women just because I happened to be a Hispanic woman. I hired white men, black women, and Hispanic men. I wanted to direct an agency that was representative of our nation's population to the very best of my ability. I will admit that I did increase the number of women on the staff, and the reason for that decision was because women had been clearly underrepresented in that agency for years, particularly in senior level positions. Now, in another agency of the department, its director, a Hispanic male, had been trying to increase the number of Hispanics in his agency because they were underrepresented. Not because he was Hispanic male, they were underrepresented. And when he started to work towards increasing their numbers, he was told that he was hiring too many Hispanics. And I'm not going to say who told him, so don't ask me that question later on in the program. Well, this is an irony that all the agency heads who are white and who hired white people to the already dominant white workforce were not told ever that they were hiring too many white people. Nor, as I am aware, were they guided to hire more minorities or women or people with disabilities. And if they were guided, I am not aware of any large number of minority hiring increases, particularly in political and senior level positions. So one of the phenomena that I'm observing in the workforce today is that whenever a Hispanic, Black, Asian, or Native American, and even women become managers of a federal agency or private company, that it usually falls upon them to increase the number of diversified employees. However, these managers are subtly discouraged from hiring too many of their own kind, as my colleague learned. Yet, if we are truly about integration and togetherness, it is the white manager that should be encouraged to add more diversity to his workforce if he already doesn't have one. The minorities, should not be the only ones hiring minorities. And if we are the only ones hiring them, it's usually because no one else is. So the second problem that I see associated with a diverse category is that it fails to take into account the differences among the minority groups themselves. differences that have made the groups unique. Rather, it tends to lump all minorities together without making distinction between the minority groups and subgroups. For example, in the Hispanic category, distinctions should be made between the Puerto Ricans, Cubans, and Mexican Americans. Even though their language may be Spanish, the rest of their culture can be quite different, and is. In addition, the problem of distinguishing between American citizens, in this case Hispanics, and to some extent Asians, versus newly arrived immigrants, legal or illegal. Many of us minorities who were born and raised in this country tend to be treated as foreigners simply because of our accents or foreign looks. We are usually asked to show proof of our citizenship on legal residency when we apply for jobs. And we are more apt to be stopped by the Immigration and Naturalization Service to show proof of legal residency than anyone else. Further, we are more often than not to be lectured on the demands of this country's culture. And I'll give you a few examples. I recently went to a spa lady, you know, fitness center, close to my home in Alexandria, Virginia. And I've always belonged to a fitness center somewhere, wherever I live or work. And I usually work a deal. I mean, I'm always the deal maker, right? So I usually work a deal with the fitness group and say, look, I just want to take your aerobics class. So I've got a gym at home, but I just need an aerobics class. So it works out well, right? Is that a problem? Okay. And I went to the spa lady, and I mentioned to the young lady at the counter, I said, I just want to apply for your aerobics classes. She says, oh, in this country, you don't do that. You have to understand this is the United States of America. All right. Well, I didn't lecture her on anything. I just moved on and figured, well, she'll learn one day. We don't want to get into a little fight here. The other thing is, I have a friend of mine who is a newscaster in Washington, D.C. She's very vivacious, very intelligent, very attractive woman. She's Hispanic, and she's in Washington, D.C. On the morning news, she is the anchor woman for the morning shows. And she tells me about she will be sent to interview various congressmen in the city and lawmakers and so forth. And when she sits down, she walks in the room, they will invariably say to her, I didn't know this interview was going to be done in Spanish. What country are you representing? She gets very, very upset. She's an American, born and raised in America, speaks English very well, thank you very much, and she's anchoring for the local news station. But they stereotype, and they expect that she does not know anything about this country. When my husband was stationed at Bolin Air Force Base, a place in the military that says they know anything about racial problems, we lived on what they call General's Row in Bolin, a very exclusive part of the base. And I used to jog every day, as I do every day of my life, and I would get invariably stopped by the police who used to monitor our neighborhood and patrol our neighborhood. And they would always stop me to show my identification. So we may be here in this country, but we still get stereotyped. We still get lectured. Sometimes even our own kind lectures us. I remember, and my own kind means Hispanics, or in this particular case, that's who I'm talking about. My cousin and I went to a record shop one time in Washington, D.C. It's where I've grown up most of my adult life. I've been living there for 25 years. And we went to a record shop, and we were inquiring about it was one of the 60s groups or 70s groups. I don't know if it was the Iron Butterfly or somebody. My cousin was into punk rock at the time, and we were looking for one of the albums. And the fellow immediately, he was from Chile, and assumed we were Latin Americans and took us right to the section of the Latin American records. He said, no, we're looking for this other group. And he says, do you know who they are? Do you know anything about them? I mean, he began to lecture us on what would you all know about a punk rock group? I mean, y'all are Latin women. So you see, even sometimes we get it from our own kind. So I'm not just signaling on white folks. I'm signaling everybody here. And some of the situations that we have to go through. A related incident also about this immigration versus American distinction occurred during the recent Los Angeles riots. The media reported that Hispanics and blacks were looting and burning buildings. However, the Hispanics of East Los Angeles, the majority of who are Mexican-American, of Mexican descent but American citizens, immediately called the media to clarify that the majority of those Hispanics rioting were residents of South Central Los Angeles and not East Los Angeles. They wanted that clarification immediately. They also said that they, these people who were looting and rioting, were illegal aliens from Central and South America. They demanded that the media make the distinction between the Hispanics who were rioting and looting and those who were not. Now, this may be kind of a subject to you that says, well, what? Well, if you get stereotyped that way, and I remember I had friends call me up and say, Grace, all you Latinos are out there rioting in Los Angeles. All of us Latinos are not rioting out there. There are some Latin people out there rioting. They're not American citizens. They're not even from this country, and they're probably here illegally. Those are the ones the INS ought to be chasing around instead of all of us innocent American citizens. But it becomes a stereotype, and then it becomes negative, and it affects all of us. So we all have to be concerned with that kind of reporting. And we do get stereotyped. I will tell you that even today, I will get in a taxi cab, I will get in whatever it is in Washington, D.C., and the driver will invariably say, what country are you from? You have an accent. I do. I don't have one accent. Yes, you do. What country are you from? And they insist on it. You know, they won't let go of you. So it's like, okay, I'm from, just name a country just to get them off your back. But they stereotype us. And they just assume I'm a foreigner. I have an accent. I have dark skin, so I cannot be from this country. I could go on and on about that, but let me just move on here a little bit. I'll give you another example. What I want to talk to next is the power and influence of the diverse population. Contrary to what we have heard about the ever-increasing number of the minority population, there is only approximately 70 million black, 22 Hispanic, 7 million Asians, and 2 million Native Americans. Although the numbers have increased for each of these groups during the past several years, these groups collectively still have many more years before they get close to becoming the majority, especially when you consider 70 million in comparison to 178 million for the total population and other populations. However, as diversity expands throughout the nation, and this group's culture and language are included in the education and work environment, their influence, not their power, and I'm going to distinguish between influence and power here, will certainly be felt in this country. Influence does not necessarily mean that you have to be accomplished, that this has to be accomplished through numbers. Now, if population forecasters are correct, though, by the year 2000, the numbers of this population groups, particularly the Hispanics, which are the fastest growing ethnic group, by the way, will increase dramatically. Thus, we should expect to see some different changes in this country's social and economic strata by the year 2000 and beyond. Already, the power of some of these groups is being felt as more and more cities elect black mayors. Voting districts are being created in areas where minorities are the majority. Thus, their representation in elective offices is widely recognized. Hispanics, for example, have 11 members in Congress and are expected to increase that number at least by 3 to 4 after the November elections. Blacks, on the other hand, are approximately 7,300 elected officials in the country. There are 26 black lawmakers currently serving in the House. And after the November elections, that number is expected to rise to 40, including very possibly the first black female senator. So, as I mentioned earlier, you don't have to have influence with numbers as much as you have power with numbers. But unless members of these minority groups are educated and then hired and then promoted in top government and private sector jobs, their power will be severely limited. They may have the numbers to elect their own mayors in their own racial and ethnic backgrounds, but their power in the economic structure of this country is another matter altogether. So, if you include, though, in the meantime, the millions of disabled, female, and aged populations to this racial and ethnic groups, then we do have quite an enormous and diverse population. whose influence and power will certainly change the face of this nation when you pull them all together. But if you separate them, that's a different situation right now. Now, I have some predictions to make that some of you all probably already know, probably don't think it'll affect Lincoln, may not care, or may go home and really get paranoid. I don't know. I hope I do something here. But what I'm concerned about, a pattern of behavior that this separatism is doing to this country, as blacks are hiring blacks because no one else will hire them, as white women hire only white women because they want to do their white women networking thing and because they feel they should hire them, right? They all of us have good intentions why we do all of this. If voting districts are continually designated as black or Hispanic, if we continue to live in separate and distinct neighborhoods, such as Little Korea in Los Angeles. Has anybody been to Los Angeles, to Little Korea in this room? Oh, gosh. Oh, one person. I'm very impressed. Well, maybe there's another one back there. I don't want to lecture the two people who are here because they've been there and they're familiar. I was not aware of how distinct that neighborhood is, for example. When you go to Los Angeles and you walk in that area, you feel like you're in Korea. You no longer are in the United States of America. It's that predominantly Korean in every sense of the word. Even, I mean, the store signs throughout, and they go on for miles, all in Korean. I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just giving you an example. We'll get back into the goodness and badness of all this. But it's amazing how very distinct these neighborhoods have been in our country, but are cropping up even more. We have black neighborhoods in the inner cities. We have the Hispanic barrios in New York and South Texas, and we have white suburbia. Now, if we continue to have black and white tables also in college dining halls, I remember when I was at Harvard, they would say, well, that's the black table over there. Well, I didn't see it. I said, where is it? It's not colored black. It's a brown table. And they said, no, it's black. Why is this? Because all the blacks eat there. Oh, my goodness. Well, why do they eat there? Well, because they want to be separate. Well, do they, or do they have any choice? Then they had the brown table, and all the Hispanics used to go there to the brown table. So all of them are designated by colors. Incredible. But if we continue to have our own entertainment shows also, in fact, recently I was looking through the television listing of shows, and they had a Hispanic entertainment show, sort of like this Grammy Awards and things. They had a Hispanic, and why are we doing this separate? Well, we'll discuss that later, but I'm just bringing those kind of everything is separate. The black community will have their black entertainment shows. And everybody's going like different directions here. So I'm afraid that if we are headed towards a very separate society that could have some serious ramifications on the future of this country if this continues. Now, don't get me wrong. There's nothing wrong with displaying, as I said, one's heritage. We should all be proud of it. But it's clearly another matter to display it at the expense of being excluded from within the dominant society. In a way, we already live in my fear in that we basically do not socialize outside our work and neighborhood environment. More and more, we see ourselves communicating only with those in our work area, never deviating to meet people from other professions, let alone mixing with other races. We also tend to live in neighborhoods that make us feel comfortable and safe. And in most cases, that spells skin color. There are those, and believe me, there are plenty of them, who would just as soon keep it that way. They want to ignore the social problems that the separatism may be creating, and they prefer to put blame on riots, such as in Los Angeles, as problems created by minorities for minorities. Now, please don't misunderstand me. I am not taking up for the bad people who looted and burned innocent people's businesses. I merely want to point out that the problems that arose were fueled by segregation, isolationism, and discrimination in jobs, in housing, and in other areas. And these are our problems, not just theirs. Los Angeles is evidence that these problems can affect our social and economic lives. Not just those who are impoverished and who are minorities. Well, One final point. Now that I have probably successfully alarmed you, or I hope I've done something here today, I want to continue alarming you about some of the problems that are occurring in this country. And that's the ever-rising problems that are now beginning, and maybe some of you may say, well, good, it doesn't bother me, it doesn't affect me. But there's some problems that are occurring between racial and ethnic groups themselves, such as blacks and Asians and Hispanics and blacks. They turn on each other for many reasons. One is competition for jobs and housing, and another is acceptance into the economic and social mainstream of this nation. We had, and I sat personally at the table, trying to resolve a conflict between the Korean merchants and the black community of Flatbush in New York. And I know some of you all heard about the grocer that was boycotted for many months because he had struck a Haitian woman. And there are problems in understanding each other's culture. And let me tell you that having been a witness to this, there are some severe problems between blacks and Koreans understanding their way in this country. There are some blacks who don't feel that Koreans are respectful to them, that they understand them, and that they come into their neighborhoods to open up stores merely to make money out of them and move on. The Koreans, on the other hand, feel that this is the country of opportunity, that they're here to work, that they're here to be part of the competitive capitalist society that we have here. And they don't see anything wrong with opening up business quickly and making a good buck and contributing something to the economy of this country. They don't understand that. So you've got those two very different groups thinking two whole, you're going to have some problems. And particularly when a lot of the Korean merchants set up their businesses in black neighborhoods, incidentally neighborhoods that a lot of people don't want to set up businesses at. So there are some problems in Los Angeles, as you saw, between the black and Koreans. You saw a lot of the Korean merchants' businesses being burned down, and a lot of them were being done by blacks and Hispanics. And you saw a lot of those tensions that came out between those two groups during. This is just part of that. It's in a lot of other places in this country. And I'm concerned about what will occur in other parts. Now, you may be here in Lincoln feeling safe and comfortable and says, this does not affect us and we don't care. Well, you're going to have to care because it's going to affect all of you. And some of you may have relatives and other friends that live in those areas. But in the end result, it's going to affect all of us. So what I'm really trying to say is that we need to be aware of the diverse population that we are all part of. We should be familiar with the numbers in our population and who makes up this population. We then need to communicate more with each other, not just about our daily work lives, but about subjects that will reveal information about our culture. We should not wait for Hispanic Heritage Month or Asian Week or Black History Month to find these things about one another. We should stop isolating, stereotyping, and discriminating against each other simply because we are unfamiliar with that person's culture. And people love to stereotype, and they think that stereotyping is not racism. And so they figure, well, this is my way out. Well, I disagree. Stereotyping to me is racism. And I can tell you so many stories about Grace Flores Hughes that you all don't want to hear about. I'm not going to bore you all today with that. But incidences of racism that I just think are just so incredible that are happening every day. In fact, when I met one of the black women who was helping us to resolve the problem between the black and Koreans in New York, she came and told me, she said, I feel discriminated every day that I walk up, that I wake up. She says, I'm tired of it. Now, this is a black woman. This is how she feels. Now, who are we to tell you that that's not true, that we love her, that we don't care what color she is? Something happens on in her daily life that makes her feel this way. And I remember being at a function not long ago at the Department of Justice. And one of the top officials there, we were having a buffet lunch, and he says, well, Grace, he says, Lou, there's your food over there. They've got nachos for you. Excuse me, I don't even like nachos. Now, that's stereotyping, but that's also meaning how that guy really feels. I was, and then there are other folks, people who come from another country here who love to discriminate too. And we were at a function about a year ago, and there was a buffet dinner again. I love this buffet dinners. I mean, it's where I get thrown into all these special meals all the time. And so this woman, she's English, who has been married to this American man for years, stood up and said, "Oh, well, I see there's your food there. They do have, I do believe they have some cornbread and they have some tortillas." I said, "Well, I don't eat that food." "Oh, well, whatever country you came from, I'm sure they eat this kind of food." And she just kept waving her hand at this horrible, I mean, I don't even remember the menu, but I think they serve something like chili or something. I don't know. And I said, "I'm sorry." I said, "I am not from Central America, and I was not raised on this food." "Oh, surely you must be. Don't ignore your race and your culture and this." You know, she kept pitching me, "I'm an American. So you can't stereotype me and assume that because I'm from Texas and I'm Hispanic and my parents were from Mexico or wherever that, I mean, I grew up with the Supremes and the Beatles, and I went to record hops in my whole high school life. I mean, I don't know what people are talking about." So we have to stereotype each other, but we do that every day. And we think that it's just so safe to do that, and we also think that it's not racial. I also have a friend of mine who recently dated, very intelligent woman, very intelligent man, supposedly. And she dated this, she was dating this fellow from Massachusetts, an Irish American. We're going to call him Irish American. He's an American, right? And she's Mexican. And he was taking her out to some restaurant, very fancy, having a drink. He says, "I just want you to know, you know, that my mother used to work in the projects in Massachusetts, so I'm familiar with you people." Well, not all Latin people live in projects. And even if we did, there's no sense in bringing that up. I mean, maybe we want to forget about those kind of lives, right? But he just felt he was being so wonderful, so patronizing. And that happens all the time. We do it to ourselves. I mean, what did you hear Ross Perot say to the NAACP when he addressed it? "You people." All right, away, he's already separating himself from the people, very people he wants to lead. And some people may say, "Well, they're being oversensitive." Now, you will hear this too, so we've got to talk about both sides of the argument here. Well, maybe it is sensitive, but maybe there are reasons for all that sensitivity, and maybe that's why we should stop and listen to why all that occurs, instead of just dismissing it as just one more mau-mauing from the Black, Hispanic, or Asian community. But I predict that unless we make an effort and take time to learn more about our country's population and learn to be patient and accepting of everyone's differences, we are headed for some very rough times. Maybe some of you will never see that, and I hope you all don't. But I doubt it. If this does not have to be, it is not. I said, but I guess what I'm trying to say is this does not have to be. All these horrible things I've said don't have to be. If we all do our part by taking time to learn about another person's culture, if we learn to be sensitive and respectful to a woman in the workplace, to appreciate a person's maturity, to respect and not patronize a person in a wheelchair, we need to include, not to exclude people. After all, this is the diverse profile of today and will be more profound as you all in here become members of the workforce. I might have not gone on too long here, and we might have more time for questions, but I wanted to stop here and give you that food for thought about what diversity means in two senses, in the racial and ethnic and in the other three groups. And what I'm speaking about today is that when we talk about it, we should include all those groups and saying we want a diverse workforce, we want a diverse student population. And incidentally, we're not talking about if you have a dominant white, we're not talking about one Hispanic or one Black. We need to include as many as we can that makes that total workforce. Because many times you will hear, "Well, we're going to hire one." One is a joke. I mean, you need that one token, that one person you're going to prop up and say, and here is my Hispanic person. Well, no, that's not the case. We're all Americans, and we should all be inclusive of one another and respect one another just as much. And so I wanted to bring that out to you and saying this is what diversity is. Whatever you hear from it, it's not just this little brown and black faces running around. It's everybody. And I don't think that this separatism is doing us much good. I don't agree on all this separatism. I mean, I resented a lot of this Hispanic Heritage Week, which I know you all have heard about, and I thought, what is this? They put pictures of all the little Hispanics they hire everywhere, and oh my goodness, look at them. It's as though we were kind of like some oddities. And finally, I've come to respect it in the sense that it's educated some folks. But it's also, I think, kind of divided us a little bit, and that's what I'm trying to bring today and bring everywhere that I speak. We don't want those divisions. We don't want those separatism. We don't want to look like aliens from another world. We want to be part of this whole country because we are. We pay taxes, and we were all born and raised here. And we all love, I mean, MC Hammer and everybody else just like everybody else does. There's no differences here. So you can't just separate us aside and say, well, she likes Spanish music or he likes MC Hammer because he's black and he likes... No. That's not what it's about in this country. And we need to stop that ourselves. And we're not doing it. It's very comfortable for us to go off and separate ourselves. But I want to thank you. I know some of you all have to go to class and some of you are here probably because, remember, I worked here. So I know some of you are just getting credit and that's the only reason you're here anyway, listening to this wonderful speaker. But I do appreciate you all inviting me to share this important subject with you all today. And I hope that if anything I have left you with good thoughts for the future about yourselves and your fellow countrymen and women in whatever color they happen to come in. Thank you so much.
Today on University Forum, we've heard Grace Flores Hughes, former director of the Community Relations Service for the United States Department of Justice. Her lecture was entitled The Power of Diversity in American Society. This has been University Forum, a presentation of Nebraska Wesleyan University. Nebraska Wesleyan is an independent, coeducational undergraduate liberal arts institution nationally recognized for excellence in teaching and the high caliber of its students and faculty. Approximately 1,400 full-time students are enrolled in more than 40 major programs.